HD Smartcast. You're listening to a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Welcome to A View from the Stands, a podcast series in which we discuss the new normal in the world of sports. I'm Aditya Iyer, and with me is the national sports editor of HD, Rudraneel Sengupta. If you two went into the final day of the Chennai Test believing, however fleetingly, that India stood even a semblance of a chance of a win, then join the club in blaming GABA or maybe even Rishabh Pant for making all of us believe that the impossible is an often repeatable thing. Joe Root 2 was temporarily part of that Pant-fearing club on the fourth day, making him not declare England's second innings at all to ensure that he took an Indian win out of the equation. Time was consumed, even if it came at the cost of England's target-setting runs. That was more than enough. Root's fear was laid to rest in the space of one incredible over on the fifth day. The first one bowled on Tuesday by the Benjamin Button of cricket, Jimmy Anderson. It set up Anderson's fourth win in India, the first one stretching all the way back to 2006 in Bombay. And more importantly, it set up Virat Kohli's first loss as captain on Indian soil. So welcome to a new episode of A View from the Stands, where we discuss all things Chennai. The past, which is of course the first test that resulted in a defeat, and the future, where the second test will be played starting Saturday. Short turnaround time, Rudra. Let's begin with your thoughts as always.
Yes, I think you touched on all the really defining moments of this match, which includes Joe Root, declaring very slowly. I have a point to make about that, which is that, I think it was a very, very important decision because, of course, as you pointed out, we all think that any kind of total is now possible to chase down in the fourth innings.
Blame Rishabh Pant, like I said, man.
Blame Rishabh Pant. And the thing is that, I actually continue to believe this, that I continue to believe that probably this somewhere down this year, we are going to see the record for the fourth innings chase broken. Absolutely. you saw what West Indies did with Bangladesh as well, right? So, I think this whole thing of chasing down a total in the fourth innings has, thing about it has transformed a bit, probably because of T20 cricket. I don't know what it is. And like you said, Rishabh Pant plays a role in this all as an individual. But England have been burnt before declaring early. I remember, for example, the 2008 test in Chennai, where England declared and India needed 387 in four sessions. I think England must have thought that was ungettable. Of course, they did think that that's why they declared. But then, in came Virendra Sehwag and he exploded and scored 83 of 68 balls, and that was that, and there was no way India was going to lose from there, and Tendulkar scored a century. Match was done by T. So I think maybe Root had that in his mind as well. And I think if he must have been thinking that if we give these guys, say, 110, 120 overs, they will sniff an opportunity, and they will probably come out with a different kind of body language, a different kind of mental makeup about what they want to do with those 120 overs. But restricting them to about 100 overs or so makes a big, huge difference, and then your whole mentality maybe changes as the team batting. And so I think there was a very important move from Root, who's making all the right moves as captain. I mean, he's a brilliant captain.
As captain, as batsman, all of it. But like on his declaration or the lack of one, because England did end up, being bowled out by India and Ashwin.
Yes, of course.
While it was happening, I really thought that it wasn't the right move, right? I was as a lot of people watching the match. Root kind of explained it really well in the post-match presentation, where he said it was basically to eat up a lot of time to take the win out of the equation, like I said right in the beginning. And this is also to make sure that, he had close-in fielders, catching fielders all the time, right? Because, after a few big hits from Pant, you don't want them at boundary ropes and, give the Indians even a sniff of victory. I get it now, but like while it was happening on the fourth day in the post-tea session, I really thought England were letting it slip. I thought Root was letting it slip. It was extremely weird to say the least. And this comparison with 2008, Rudra, I just want to point out that I think that kind of defines like, you know, the like what an anomaly that test match was in terms of chases in India, not just because it's not been done before, like you very rightly pointed out. I think that record and 400 and all of that is going to fall very soon because of just how amazing our players are in India and the T20 influence, the IPL influence and all of that. But then that win was totally down to Sehwag, right? Like, because just to put that match in perspective, turning track, yes, Andrew Strauss batted for 15 hours over two innings and made two centuries. Sehwag got out for, I think, like a single-digit score in the first innings or a duck. I'm not very sure. This is completely from memory. In the second innings, he batted for 45 minutes, scored 80 runs, and won man of the match. That's 45 minutes to Strauss's 15 hours. And by the way, he won man of the match when Sachin Tendulkar got a fourth innings 100. So it tells you how decisive that just those 45 minutes were when he took on Monty, when he took on a very young Graham Swan, by the way, young in terms of experience. He just completely turned that match around. I mean, things like that, it would not have happened even in that test match if not for Sehwag, despite how well Sachin and Yuvraj batted on day five. But yes, some very, very, very valid points there. It looked like Root was, you know, letting it slip, but he clearly had his plans in motion. Good place to start with Root the batsman too then. Your thoughts on that amazing 200. We all know the form that he came into India on. Take over.
Possibly the best player of spin right now, do you think?
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. Sure. Outside of India, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, even if he's employing the sweep all the time, I mean, just to be able to do that with the kind of consistency and the kind of effect that he has with it, and you know, and he's not just doing it as a defensive measure. His scoring of it, his you know, he's got a lot of control over. Yeah, amazing performance from him. But for me, the thing that truly delighted me, and as usual, it's my bias about batsmen versus bowlers, is James Anderson, right? Just to see the off stump cartwheeling out of the ground, you know, twice in the space of one over is just a joyous thing, you know. I mean, and immediately I thought of Shoaib Akhtar getting Rahul Dravid and Sachin Tendulkar in that, the year. Yeah.
1999 in Eden Gardens, Asian Test 99. Championship.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, like, shouldn't say this because I support India, but I do think that I support fast bowling even more than I support a team.
Please stick your neck out, Rudra. It's a good thing to do. Even though, you know, if you stick it out this much, it usually and often goes on a chopping block, but this is excellent. This is exactly why we record a podcast, right? So, yeah.
So I don't think anything thrilled me more than to see the just as a lover of the game, you know, to see the stuff that Anderson does at the age of 38, you know, and he keeps improving. It's incredible. I mean, the drive that he has and the ability to preserve himself as a fast bowler through the rigors of what is one of the most unnatural things to do with the body, physically so stressful, you know, every single ball, your that high impact on your knees when you land, and to keep yourself fit through that and to improve your skills. I mean, for example, today, I don't know if you noticed this during the match, that Anderson has picked up something that Zahid Khan does, which is that he's hiding the ball with his other hand.
He's hiding the ball, yeah. I did notice that. Yep.
Yeah. And that's great, you know. So you know, the batsmen don't know what's coming at them. And it's a lovely little point thing to pick up. It's something that works in Indian conditions on a slow pitch like Chennai, which was really an awful pitch for fast bowlers. But, you know, as soon as the SG ball started swinging, Anderson was just making it sing. I don't know what batsmen can do to counter this. But, you know, so, I mean, to get batsmen on the front foot on a pitch as slow as this is in itself an incredible achievement, you know. And in the second inning, 7 overs, 4 maidens, 8 runs, 3 wickets. That's just phenomenal figures there. And one of the things I was thinking about when I was watching, when I saw the dismissal of Gill and then Rahane, you know, Rahane got out like two balls in a row, actually. Yeah, and then Pant 2 overs later, is that when you have a high back lift, is that a problem when you have to play reverse swing? Because ideally, the way to play reverse swing is to stay on your back foot, to play the ball as late as possible. But that becomes hard if you have a high back lift, right?
Yeah. And especially against Anderson, right? Because like you just mentioned, covers the face of the ball before bowling. That's so that you don't know which side, the shinier side, is on. Anderson is one of the very, very, very few fast bowlers in the world who can get it to reverse away from the right-handed batsman, right? Like reverse swing conventionally tails in very late towards the shiny side and into the right-handed batsman's pads. Anderson can take it away and not just marginally, but like, you know, with like that same booming banana swing away from the batsman. So if a batsman doesn't really know which side the shiny side is being held on, in Anderson's palms, it makes it so much tougher because, like you said, it's just easier the way to play reverse swing in India, you know, in these dry conditions when it starts reversing early as the 21st, 22nd over. I mean, that over that Anderson bowled where he got those two wickets that you just described was the 26th, but it was already reversing very heavily. And the way to play that, of course, is by staying on your back foot, like you mentioned. But if you don't know which way it's going to tail, in or away, then it makes it so much tougher, right? And you could see that Rahane especially was caught in two minds twice, like you said. Had Nitin Patel, Nitin Menon, I'm so sorry. Nitin Patel is, of course, our great physio who's done the most wonderful job since God knows when, right? Since Adelaide. Nitin Menon, the umpire, had he given it out, it would have been out. So, you know, Anderson just decided to take Menon out of the equation with the next ball. But my God, how do you do that? And you mentioned the bizarreness of those numbers, right? 7 overs, 4 maidens, 3 wickets, 8 runs. In Gaul, again, in conditions quite similar to Chepauk, you know, about a week and a half ago, he played the second test in place of Stuart Broad. And I think at one point his figures were, let me get this right, because I did write about it just a few days back. I think it was 15 overs, 11 maidens, 15 runs, 3 wickets or something like that, right? Like, how do you give 15 runs in 15 overs? Like in Sri Lanka, right? It's just, this guy, like you said, is just, I mean, just such a rare act. I mean,
If the pitch offers him help, he takes it. If the pitch doesn't offer him help, he just takes the pitch out of the equation. That's just a crazy thing to do.
That's right.
So going from there, I wanted to ask you a question, which is that, you know, we've got England's bowling looks really good, of course, with Anderson and you've got Jofra with his pace and his you know, variations. You've got Ben Stokes doing a good job. Bess and Leach did really well.
Yeah.
India seemed to have missed out on picking the right combination in terms of both Shahbaz Nadeem and Washington Sundar. Didn't really put the pressure on the England batsmen and didn't really help Ashwin's cause or Bumrah's cause in the match. What do you think we could have done better? Who could we have picked in? Did we miss out on Kuldeep Yadav, for example?
Yeah. Kuldeep, basically. So essentially, the only other guy who could have played, I think perhaps in place of Shahbaz Nadeem, who didn't have his best test match, unfortunately it was just the second one, could have been Kuldeep, right? I mean, the person we really missed, he's injured, of course, was Ravindra Jadeja, because even the last time when England played in Chennai, we don't have to go all the way back to 2008, this was right now in 2018, there were just so many runs scored, right? Like before the pitch started turning and before, you know, like the draw was almost a certainty, but Jadeja kind of like just chucked that out of the equation completely with his fifth day show. Because can you imagine, England made 477 first inning runs in that Chennai test and still lost by an innings. right? India just had to bat once. Of course, that Karun Nair triple century helped. I think Rahul nearly made a double. He got 199. Now, these are, of course, like that match is heading towards a draw. The moment the pitch starts turning, the moment, you know, that rough outside the right-handed batsman's leg stump starts growing, you know, Jadeja's in the picture. And man, is he phenomenal in such conditions. Even if Kuldeep would have played, he wouldn't have hit those spots because, you know, he's essentially a left-arm leg spinner, right? So he's still going to be bowling it outside the right-handed batsman's off stump, which is exactly where Shahbaz unfortunately bowled it. He could not exploit that rough at all. I think he's going to step down for the next test in Chennai itself. But the and problem Kuldeep here, Rudra, yeah, Kuldeep is going to come in. But like, see, Kuldeep is, I mean, like he is a rhythm bowler, and right now his confidence is really, really low. Which
I was just going to ask you that. I mean, like, imagine his morale right now, being a person who's almost never picked in the team, no matter what is happening. I mean, India almost did not have a fit playing 11 at Brisbane, and still he couldn't make it to the team.
And still didn't play. Can you imagine that? Yeah, poor guy, man. But yeah, so, and didn't get a chance here on a track that everybody knew was going to wear and tear and crumble by the third day. You know, these pitches, you know, they turn abrasive quite quickly. Didn't get a chance there too. Is now going to get a chance because the second choice left-arm spinner basically failed at his duties and, you know, came across looking a little pedestrian, which is sad for Nadeem because, you know, yeah, you always root for these guys who are very early on in their test careers, especially guys who get a chance very, very late on in their lives. Nadeem, by the way, made his first class debut before anybody else in this Indian team. And he's now just two test matches old and you can't see him getting a chance, at least in this series, right? Which is a little sad. You root for such guys. But now, yeah, Kuldeep's going to come in that guy's place. So,
But I want to ask you because again, I mean, I just want to give in to all my biases at any opportunity I get. And because Mohammad Siraj is my current favorite bowler, is there any opportunity for Siraj to come into this team just because we know that he moves up, he's good moving the ball on the track as well as on in the air. Do you see that happening? A three-man pace attack, two spinners?
Yeah, I would have absolutely have loved to have seen him play in this test itself, in the first test itself, especially after, you know, Ishan's first spell or second. But Ishan's also, you know, coming back after a ridiculously long break. He didn't go to Australia at all. But he showed just how potent he is in these conditions and just how well he knows it. Not just because he got his 300th wicket, but there was this one spell, one wicketless spell that he bowled to Root. I think with Ashwin bowling at the other end in the first innings, when Root was we hadn't even gotten to 100 at that point. And the commentators also noticed it, and some of us watching quite keenly did too. It seemed like a very programmed spell in the sense that from the think tank, they were going to bring in Ishant for a certain number of set overs. Like, I think this was post-T on day one. And then they took him off immediately after that, just when things started happening, right? Like, he completely blocked up the scoring. Ashwin, of course, does that. You know, it's a habit for him. But, like, the two of them were making things happen and Ishant was taken off. And then you saw just how amazing he was in the second innings on the second day as well. When he got all, when, you know, he ran through a few wickets, got to his 300th. Man, he's exceptional. I can't see Siraj playing in his place. Maybe in Washi's place. But again, now, I think Washington Sundar was picked as a number six batsman, and how great did he look again?
He looked amazing, and I don't think Sundar is going anywhere. But I was thinking of just playing Sundar and Ashwin as the two spinners, and picking Siraj instead of Nadeem, have a three.
I see. All right. So I have a feeling you might have just cracked the playing 11 for the next test then, because that totally seems workable. Yeah. But imagine playing three pacers in a wicket like this, which I think, I mean, even if they play on the adjacent track, I don't think it's going to be too different from the one that they just played on in its makeup or culture. So I don't know how it's going to go.
What about Ajinkya Rahane is the other question. I mean, it seems even seems quite bizarre that we are that I'm even bringing him into the conversation, considering what he did as captain in Australia, you know, the miraculous turnaround, as well as that century in Melbourne. But he's not really scoring runs, and that could be a problem, considering the place he occupies in the batting lineup. What do you think of that? Am I being too harsh?
Yeah, because if you look at his numbers from, you know, the last, say, 15 tests, it's basically a lot of troughs and like this one massive solitary peak, right? Which was the 100 in Melbourne. He was great in the second innings there too, when we had a very smallish target to chase and, you know, your mindset completely changed for an innings like that versus here where you know that, like, you know, if you don't score runs at number five, he went back to five, right? When the other team has basically posted 578 runs, then you know your team's going to be in trouble. So it's a completely different mindset. I don't know what it is with him. It's like you said, it's extremely weird that, you know, his place is once again being tested immediately after Australia, right? Like, not just with his back, but also with his mind, he pulled off something that often is not pulled off, right? Maybe it just, like, you know, got us all believing that these things happen over and over again, not just batting wise, but like wins also. But yeah, your take on his batting, because I really don't have an answer here.
No, I think he is going through a lean patch. I don't think the century in Melbourne, you know, had an appreciable effect on that. And I think he has been struggling for a couple of seasons now. And there's, I don't know, I mean, if it's fair to bring that in here, but, you know, even in the IPL, we've seen that, you know, he's kind of pushed around and doesn't do really well with the bat. And so I don't know if that affects his morale or what that is about. But it sure seems like, you know, I mean, the stats are there for us to see. He's batting in an extremely important position where he's not getting runs as consistently as somebody batting in that position should be getting. Also, you know, that there is much option. I don't know who else can replace him, and I don't want. I mean, he's a great strategist, for example. There's no doubt about that. In terms of a tactical acumen, you know, he's up there with anybody else. But just the batting, I think he really needs to put some scores on the board through the duration of the rest of the series, or he may find himself again fighting for a place in the team.
Yeah, yeah. It's basically when your string of low scores start, you know, getting a little longer than your patches of success, like people, you know, notice the fact that, like, you know, the troughs at that point don't really look like troughs, because, you know, you basically need a lot of peaks for you to, like, you know, spot a trough, right? This looks like a very low plateau, and that's not a good place to be in, especially when there's so much competition knocking on the door. It, you know, like, I think Kohli could well shuffle the order about, and, you know, Hardik Pandya is waiting in the wings, for example. KL Rahul is waiting, right? Like, they're both in the squad. It sounds like drastic moves, but who knows, right?
I would put Hardik Pandya in any squad at any given on any given day. I really would.
He might come in too. He might come in too. But that pretty much takes Siraj out of the equation, because three fast bowlers. I want to wrap this up by basically asking you about England, what they should do. See, Jack Leach didn't have a great first innings, but he was more than made up for it in the second. Is there anything they are going to change there? Put yourself in Root's place, and your concluding thoughts on England's win and what to look forward to.
I don't think England are going to change a thing. I think they're very, very settled in the squad that they have right now. And it's not just about this match. It's also about the previous two tests in Sri Lanka. You know, and they're doing really, really well with the squad that they have. So I don't think they're going to change it at all. We're going to see an
unchanged team. Except for Butler, who goes back.
Yeah, of course. And Well, I mean, and India have a real task in their hands because, you know, now the equation is that they need to win at least two of the last three matches and draw the other one if they have to make the finals of the World Test Championship. And I think this is something that Kohli really, really wants, being the super competitive person that he is, you know. It's a milestone that I think he's looking forward to. And it's just got really hard now. Two wins and a draw could be out of India's reach. But the thing is, if Kohli is looking at that milestone and playing accordingly, we are certainly in for a very exciting series.
Could not have said that any better myself. Yeah, that's it for this episode. If anyone how to turn around a test series after, you know, a debilitating loss in the first test, it's India. Australia should tell you that, you know, the series that we just witnessed before this. Many, many weeks of great cricket, and we shall be back to discuss whether the second test in Chennai lived up to everything else that we've witnessed so far. Good night and good luck.
This was an episode of A View from the Stands. Do like and follow us on at HT Smartcast on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, or write to us on podcasts@hindustantimes.com. You can listen to more podcasts by logging on to htsmartcast.com.
This was a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.